Okay, today lesson four. I did give you changes in the glossary for lesson four.
And also for the week.
For the front and back.
Yes.
Okay.
Some new students mentioned to me that they really enjoy your explanations on the grammatical points. Please do not feel that it's boring for us. In fact, it's very helpful.
The grammatical.
The grammar, yeah. Right. It's what really keeps us awake. It's really good.
Is that so? Right. Who said that?
Yeah, you see them?
Take more time.
Yeah.
To explain the grammar.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to go to the grammar. Okay, on page 50. Okay, this is, again, it's the pronoun form. Oh, I see. In lesson two, they gave just the nominative, I think, the nominative and accusative forms. But here you get the whole paradigm with declension of this form, starting from nominative, accusative. And if you really enjoy the grammar so much... I mean, there's nothing for me to explain here. You just have to memorize it. So, yeah. Where does it say the same word? Oh, I see. Generally, ayang, imang, idang means this. Occasionally, from context, it seems you might have to render it as that. But generally, it's pointing to something which is, you know, close by or a subject of discussion, something that's already under discussion. Then they give, you see, they for certain forms, they have alternatives. One form is with the I am, like genitive dative, imasa and asa, imina and anena. I'd say generally the im forms, like imasa, imina, imamha, are more common. But occasionally you get the, well, asa is actually common. Imasa and asa are both common. But anena, not very common. Asma, not very common. Imusmin is more common. I am feminine. Feminine genitive dative. Imaya seems to me to be more common. And feminine locative. None of them are encountered very often. Maybe imisang, imayang, I'm not sure. Then in plural, again, the ime forms are more common than the simple forms like isang, esanam. Okay, the noun for cow, which is go. I'd say you don't have to memorize this, but just look over this declension and be able to recognize if you come across it. And then to be able to use the table to track down what case it is. Okay, now point three. This is very important, point three. What's called... I'm actually... I've been studying Pali 30 years. I'm not sure if it's pronounced gerund or gerund. gerund. Okay, this is very important because in Pali, people don't go to the store and buy a carton of milk, but rather they say, having gone to the store, he bought a carton of milk. Or you'll never get a sentence in Pali that will read, will have several finite verbs in the same sentence. Like you don't say, the Venerable Ananda went to the Buddha, saluted him, and sat down to one side. Or rather, the Pali reads, the Venerable Ananda, having gone to the Buddha, having saluted him, sat down to one side. And the gerund is the form which indicates the form of a verb which would be translated in English as having done this, having done that. And the gerund is used to show, to indicate a succession of actions taking place, culminating in the main action, which is indicated by the normal verb, the finite verb. And the primary way of indicating the gerund is with this termination twa, tva, tva. And because occasionally you have the form dvana instead of tva. Particularly, tvana is more common in verse, but in ordinary prose, tva, like the sentence I just gave you before, then the Venerable Ananda went to the Buddha, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. Attako ayasma anando bhagavantang abhivadet, no, bhagavantang upasankamit va, having approached him. Abhivadet va, having bowed down to him. Then ekamantang atasi, or ekamantang nisidi, sat down to one side. We will see plenty and plenty of examples of this. It's very, very common. Okay, and as the text explains, the normal way of creating the gerund is by adding twa to the present stem, except that the final A of the present stem is replaced by I. Actually, they give some bad examples, since I don't think we get the form bhavitva, at least not in Sutta Pali. In Sutta Pali, you would have bhava turns into the whole form, so you get hutva. Don't worry about that, though. Then labhati is actually irregular. You very rarely, if ever, get labhitva. You would get ladda. So garahati is all right. Garahitva. Okay, so here you take the infinitive, garahitung, but instead of tung, you put dva, garahitva. Then there are types of verbs in which the present stem has e instead of a, like neti, to lead. So for the gerund, you get netva. For to preach or to teach, de seti, you get de setva. Actually, what they're calling the gerund, now I've seen more contemporary, or these are contemporary writers of Pali, but in the works that I'm familiar with, they call it the absolutive. I think the word gerund is now, it's not so fashionable for this formation. Okay, then for some verbs, the ending tva is added directly to the verbal root rather than to the present or infinitive stem, but the root may undergo changes in shape and there are many irregularities. Some forms are given below, others will be given as they appear in the readings. Okay, for karoti, to do, you have katva. For gachati, you see the root of karoti is actually kri, kar. So tva gets added to the kar, the r drops out, and it just becomes katva. The root of gachati is gam, G-A-M. So you add tva to the gam, but the M turns into a T, into an N to match the T, because their T is a dental sound. The M undergoes a change to N, because T belongs to the dental family. It got its DDS degree in Florida State University, and it's that's why it belongs to the dental family. Then the root su gives a verb, sunoti or sunati, to hear. But you add tva directly to the root su, so you get sutva. So then we have several more of these. Pitva. Let's skip over pasati for a moment. Deiti, dadati, the root is long, a da. Then janati, you see the root of janati is nya. So we add tva to that. The a shortens. And then this is the proper, or the usual gerund for labati, not labitva, but it's a regular, irregular form, ladda, ladda. It's just every language, spoken language, has some irregular forms. Like in English, we have the verb to go, so you say he goes, he is going. But you wouldn't say he gone to the store. Yesterday he gone to the store, but he went to the store, completely different. Okay, then with this pasati, you see there are actually in Pali, in old Sanskrit, two verbs meaning to see, two roots, pash, which gives us present form pashyati, which in Pali becomes simplified to pasati. Then there was another, I think in Sanskrit, dish, but this doesn't. In Sanskrit, the present form is not taken from dish, but to indicate seeing in the present, always they use the root pas. But dish gives rise to other forms. We have, for example, the past participle. It was seen, dita. And then this gives a noun, view, ditti. If we say micha ditti, wrong view, or sama ditti, right view, it comes from this root dis. It's from dis also that we get the gerund form, disva. Okay, then there are also forms to make things a little confusing for you. there are also gerunds which are formed by adding the suffix ya. You see, in Sanskrit, there is a fixed rule, an invariable rule. When you form the gerund from a verb in the simple form, it has the ending twa. But when you form the gerund from a verb with a prefix, like pari or abhi or adi or pari, abhi, adi, upa, there are various prefixes, then you have to, you don't use tva, but you use ya, ya. This is in Sanskrit. In Sanskrit, the simple form without a prefix, you always use tva. Whenever there's a prefix, you would use ya. But in Pali, you can get the forms with prefixes, sometimes with tva, sometimes with ya. You can have both, even for the same verb. Like one example that they give that we came across in lesson one, Pariyadaya. Which means something like having obsessed or taken possession of. Okay, here there's one prefix, pari, which has the, I suggest, the meaning of completely, thoroughly, plus another prefix, a, plus the root is da. Da means to give, like, and then da will give you the ordinary verb dati, he gives, she gives, or dadati, two forms for the present. But when you put da, when you prefix da with a, it has the opposite meaning, to take. So we say adadati would mean one takes, or adati. Then pari means, you could say, takes over. Takes over the mind in this case. Yachitan pariyadaya tipati. Any questions about this? Well, this is the way a language develops, or at least many languages develop in this way. I think almost all the, what they call the Indo-European languages develop. You have very simple, originally simple words just to indicate simple actions, simple objects, to take, give, stand, sit, move, rise, fall. Then you, well, we do this in English, like, okay, a word like construction, we have a prefix kun, goes with struck, let me see, pose means to put, then we have compose, to put together, suppose, compose, suppose, any others from suppose? Or the simple form we don't use, but struct, S-T-R-U-C-T. We have construct, destruct, deconstruct. Yeah. No, they mean the same thing, and they're used in the same way. It's just, I know, it just became a usage, even in old Sanskrit, to use the tva for the simpler forms and the ya for the prefix forms. But then what happened in Pali is that the ya is not I think the ya is confined to prefix forms, but prefix forms can also have tva. So there's not a fixed distinction between them as in Sanskrit. Any additional questions? Okay, now we come to section 4. Last week or a couple of weeks ago, we dealt with the present participle using the, call this the present participle stem, ant. Just look at chapter 3, 6.1. Grammatical section 6.1. Okay, like gacchati gives you the present participle stem, gacchant, labhati, labant. So you would have gacchanto, gacchantang, labanto, labantang, and so on. But another way to form the present participle is with the ending mana. So you would add mana directly to the present stem. Here, gacchati gives you gacchamana. I think this would be extremely rare. I don't recall seeing gacchamana. But this, the next one is normal. for upajjati, the present participle would be upajjamana. Then when the present stem ends, has the E changes to aya before mana. Deseti, desaya mana. Again, that seems very artificial to me. We would say desento would be more normal. Desenta. Then you see in Sanskrit, the anto forms like gacchanto were used for active nouns, transitive nouns. And the mana form was used for what's called middle, transitive verbs. Did I say transitive nouns? No such thing. Transitive verbs, active verbs. Verbs that where the action moves from a subject to an object. The mana form was used for what are called middle verbs, middle voice verbs. These are reflexive verbs where the subject performs an action, but it's not an action passing from a subject to an object. For example, when we say in English, well, we say, he enjoys himself. The way we say that, we have to put an object, himself. But he's really just experiencing enjoyment. So in Pali, in Sanskrit, this would be so aramate. It doesn't take any object. So that would form a present participle. So ramamano, while enjoying himself. But in Pali, this distinction gets blurred. So for the same verb, you can have sometimes the anto form, sometimes the mano form. And then now 4.2, some verbs also have present participles of this type in ana rather than mana. Here we have an example, anupadiyano. Actually, the an is just a negation, so it would be upadiyano. This is... Actually, I said, Dasi, this is wrong. It's adiyat. Okay, this would give the ordinary present form. Upadiyati, which means... one clings, or one holds, takes hold of. Da means to give. With the prefix a, it means to take. And upa has the sense of towards. In other words, taking towards oneself. So one appropriates, clings, holds tightly. That's upadiyati. Then to form the present participle, you can say upa. Oh, I'm sorry, we're not in the present. Yeah, we're in the present participle, not the gerund. One can say upadiyamano or upadiyamana. But sometimes, I think particularly in verse, one can get the form upadiyana. And similarly, we have this samapajano, which means correctly understanding, correctly comprehending. And the present part, this is point 5 here. I'm sorry, point 4.3. That the present participles can occur either as adjectives modifying other nouns, or they can occur as nouns in their own right. If there is no other noun, then you should understand in the present participle, you should understand the subject one to be implicit. So that, say, anupadiyano occurring alone means one who is clinging, or sampajano, occurring without any other subject in the sentence, means one who is correctly understanding. Any questions about, yeah? Yeah. No, you see, not that a means to take. Da means to give. But when you prefix da with a, it sort of reverses the movement. So ada means to take. So upa plus a, but upa plus ada means to take towards oneself, or to cling, to cling. Yeah. Yeah.
And in here, we actually have mana. And do we just assume that mana follows the masculine ending, therefore we need to change the ending?
Yeah, mana gets declined according to the normal pattern of nouns ending in A. Okay, so let's say gacha, if it's the subject is a masculine, it would be, say, upajamano, arising. He is arising. If it's a feminine, it ends with the long A, upajamana.
Always with a long A, even if the subject
ends with A. Yeah, even if it's a feminine noun, iti upajamana, sa iti upajamana. Iti is woman. It's a noun of the class ending with the short I. But when upajamana qualifies it, it takes the feminine a, the long A ending, mana, upajamana. Neuter would be ang, yeah, manang. Idang, let's see, idang upajamanang, this arising, such and such.
And then, the same will apply when we instead of using mana,
yeah, yeah, the same.
And so if we use it as a noun, as a son, if we use a feminine ending,
yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, in fact, they give an example at the end of number 5. They explain this. Point 5 in this lesson, page 53. The mana present participle takes the endings of a feminine a stem when it is used as a noun. Thus, gachamana means she who goes, and so on. Okay, but go start at the first point in Section 5, the present participle and ant may take a feminine verbal noun by taking the affixes, that's the ending, of an I-stem feminine noun. See chapter 1, 1.23. Let's see what they gave. So it's like the form ending in the long would be like decline similar to nadi on page 6. Dainty, she who is giving, would be dainty, dainting, daintya, then plural, daint, generally daintyo or dainty. That's plural nominative accusative, then genitive dative, daint. Dainang, instrumental ablative, daintihi, then locative, daintisu. Okay, point six. Repeat the question.
Denti,
right.
I was expecting
A-N-T.
What happened to A-N-T? Doesn't it say that it's present part of the body, A-N-T?
I see. Okay, yeah, this is an irregular verb that they've given. Thanks for bringing that out. Because, yeah, dainty and caronte are both somewhat irregular. Let's take irregular. Okay, let's take gachanto. As though we were, you could take page, go to page 37. Though I would say gachanta would be more usual. Gachanta. Excuse me. No, I'm just trying to think what would be the form or the present participle created using the ant stem. Gachanta. Gachantam. I'll actually have to check on this. It seems to me that the forms with the long I are rather special and unusual. I think for a feminine, normally it would be declined according to the model of the feminine nouns ending in the long A, like Sala on page 18. Gachanta, Gachantang, Gachantaya, or actually it would become Gachataya, then the plural Gachantayo, or simply Gachanta. Then becomes gacchatanang, gacchatahi. But there must be some exceptional cases that take the I form. We will just have to take them when we come across them. Okay, in six, paragraph six, in addition to the optative endings given in lesson three, there are alternative endings in some of the person number categories as follows. Here this is second person singular. Sometimes it will end simply in E. Sometimes the first person plural ends in ama. Bavema, let us say bavema. Instead of ayama, ama. Instead of ayata, ata. And aram. Again, it's good just to be able to recognize these if you come across them. These seem to me to be more forms used in verse rather than in prose.
Do you mean that the A is only for second verse, not for all three?
I understand that it's only for the second person singular, yeah. No, it's also used for third person. Yeah, I think it's used for third person, first person. Actually, it might be all three persons. Okay, then we come in seven to numerals. Okay, then the stem forms, eka, dvi, ti, chattu, and pancha. Then one, okay, turning to page 54, one has both singular and plural forms. In the singular, it is commonly used as a pronoun. And the plural is used both as a pronoun and as an adjective. And when it's used as a pronoun, ak, then it has a sense of some. And eka is inflected like the demonstrative pronoun, se and tung. Eko, ekung, ekasa, ekena, ekumha, ekumhi. Then the numbers three and four, ti and chatu, are declined by by way of masculine, neuter, feminine, and also, well, actually they're plural, so they're there's no singular three or four. So you should be able to recognize these forms. It's useful to memorize them also. But for some reason, dvi, meaning two, does not distinguish genders. But you have case divisions for two. So you just have to learn them and be able to recognize them. And then the numbers from five up don't have distinction of genders, but there are distinctions of cases. Like five, the number five. Nominative accusative is pancha. Dative genitive, panchanang. Instrumental ablative, panchahi. Locative, panchasu. Then the word sabba, meaning all, can be used by itself as a pronoun. Instead of saying all men, like sabbe, manusa, you could just say sabbe, meaning all in general. And then it takes plural endings of the, it follows the declension of the pronouns, similar to sa, like so, nominative singular, masculine, sabbe, neuter sabbani, feminine sabba, masculine, neuter, genitive, dative, sabbesung. And another word declined in the same way is para, which means other. So you have paresung, meaning of others. Okay, then nine verbs of fearing, the verbs tasati and bayati, take the genitive of the thing feared. They fear, they are, like for example, we would say they are afraid of the rod or of punishment. So tasanti dandasa. Then in making comparisons, there's a word eva, which means like or as, but it usually gets abbreviated to simply va. For example, go in this line, go polva gavo ganayang pare sung. Go polva means like a cowherd. Gopo is cowherd. Va means like, gavo or cows. Ganayang is, this is a present participle form, meaning counting. Paresang, this is the genitive plural of para, meaning others. So of others. Yeah. 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 It's functioning as a present participle. It's a present participle in agreement with gopo, cowherd. Cowherd, counting, cattle. You see the ganayan form, if you look on page 36, you see that the present participle, the usual form would be something like ganayanto. That would be normal, ganayanto. But there's a shorter form used mainly in verse. Instead of saying ganayanto, you would say ganayang. You see on the top of page 37, gachanto or gachang. So this is an example of that type. Yeah, yeah. The normal form would be ganayanto. In prose, you would have ganayanto. But in verse, the more compact form, because you have to get the right number of syllables to fit the meter. And so ganayang has evolved. Okay, and now I think we've already come across one form for if. in the previous lesson, I think in the dialogue with King Melinda. Yeah, we came across the form with yadi, meaning if, then such and such. Here there's another way to say if, che, C-E. But when che occurs, it always occurs inside the sentence. It doesn't begin the sentence. In fact, there's another form to begin the sentence. Sache, that is if at the beginning of the sentence. But if you want to put the if word inside the sentence, then it becomes che. It's called clitic. Yadi also means if. Yadi is used in the same way at the beginning of the sentence. No, unless it's a very complex sentence in which one is developing a long argument, and so the yadi is actually beginning like a new clause within a very complex sentence. But in, say, if it's a simple sentence, yadi would come at the beginning, yadi or sache, but che comes inside. So to take this, the example I give, let's see. Ahan che eva, kopana musavadi asang. Here, musavadi means a speaker of falsehood, a liar. So the sentence begins with ahang, which means I. Then the che turns it into a conditional. If I, asang means, it's an optative form meaning to be. If I were to be a liar, then some consequence would follow. Yeah. Musavado means false speech. It's a masculine, meaning false speech. No. We haven't come across this form yet, or at least he hasn't explained this type of noun. It's a noun which ends in I-N. So you would, if you have musavadin, it means one who utters false speech. No, it's not a present participle. It's a noun, a simple noun. Yeah. The end form, which makes nouns, the termination I-N, often gives the sense of possessing something. So, for example, pukka means a wing or wings. And so pukkin, ending with I-N, means that which possesses wings. In other words, what? A bird. Hatta means a hand. Hatting means that which possesses a hand. No, I don't think you'll guess what it is in 100 years. No. You won't guess. An elephant. Why? Because it uses its trunk like a hand to grab things. Or danda means one meaning a stick for walking. So danding means one who has a stick, one with a walking stick. And here, vado is speech or statement. Vading is one who speaks. Or even in Buddhist, we have this. We say it's like Theravada means literally it's the doctrine of the elders. Then one who belongs to the Theravada school is called Theravadin. What we have Vijnanavada, the doctrine of consciousness, the consciousness school. Then Vijnanavadin would be one who advocates the doctrine of mere consciousness. Any questions? Shall we go on till four? Give the people who came some distance, enough returns on their investment in gasoline.
You're the boss.
No boss, but I don't want to be like a slave driver. Everybody's exhausted and tired and thinking, oh, when will this class be over? Yeah. A group of four.
We have the number three, number.
Yeah,
three.
Yeah.
So let's say we say four persons.
Yeah.
But of the four persons, some are men, some are
women. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You just use the. Oh, I see. I know this sounds terribly patriarchal, but don't blame me. It's old Indian society. It will use the masculine form. Okay, let us go to the reading exercises. Okay, on page is it? 45, paragraph or section 1. Evam eva ko bhikkave chataro me samana brahmananang upakilesa. Yehi upakilita ekke samana brahmana na tapanti na vasanti na virochanti. Okay, evam eva means what? In the same way, or just so. In other words, this passage, it's following a simile. The simile was there are four upakilesas of the sun, by reason of which the sun doesn't radiate, glow, and shine. The four are clouds, dust, mist, something else. So here he's completing the comparison. In the same way, O monks, Chitaro me. Here, chitaro me actually represents chitaro ime. But the I drops out because of sandhi, because of conjunction. And notice that in English, when we want to say something about a group qualified by a number, we say, these four reasons might be given. These four tape players, these four clocks, these four persons. But in Pali, the order is inverted. You put the number first and then the pronoun after. So four are these upakilesa. Upakilesa is related to the word kilesa. Kilesa is like Sanskrit klesha, defilements. Upa has basically the same meaning, you might say corruptions, of samanas. Samanas are ascetics or monks, and brahmins. Brahmins, the priests. And chitaro is what gender and number. What gender is it? It's masculine. Because it's qualifying upakilesa, it might not be so obvious, but but upakilesa defilements take the masculine gender, even though they're not either male nor female. Okay, now you see the structure here. Now the relative clause comes in. Generally, the relative precedes the demonstrative, but here the sequence is inverted just to give special emphasis. Yehi upakile sehi upakilita. So there are these four defilements of ascetics and Brahmins, corrupted by which corruptions? Ake samana brahmana. Here, ake is plural based on eka, which means one. And it's almost like a oxymoron to say a plural of one. But the plural of one is some. Corrupted by which some ascetics and Brahmins, natapanti, you could say, do not glow, nabasanti, do not shine, nabirochanti, do not radiate. Katame chataro, what are the four? Santi bhikkave, eke samana brahmana, surang pifanti meriang. Bhikkave, O monks, there are, here putting santi at the beginning gives special emphasis, there are some ascetics and Brahmins who drink. Sura means distilled liquor or distilled alcoholic drink. We say liquor. And meriang is fermented liquor. Or that's a fermented alcoholic beverage, wine. So they drink liquor and wine. Then sura meria pana uppati virat. Here, sura meria pana is which case? Ablative. How do we know it's ablative? How do you know it's not plural, masculine, plural, nominative? Oh, that's a good way to explain it. But just arbitrarily, let's suppose it has been made masculine. You would still get both the you get a masculine and ah, and the feminine and a masculine and ah, and the ablative ending in ah. Feminine also, if it were feminine. Now if it were feminine, then the ablative would come out differently. It would be panaya. Excuse me? Yeah. It's ablative. But the way one distinguishes, when you know the meaning of all the words, then from the context you can judge. Particularly the word pati viratta here. Apati viratta, which means not refraining. Here it's based on the root ram. So from the root rum, we get the verb rumati, which means to enjoy, to delight in. But just when you're about to lift up that delicious glass of wine or that wonderful glass of scotch, somebody comes and adds a V to it. V rumati, which means killing the enjoyment. Or stopping the enjoyment. So you get from rata, from ramati, to enjoy, you get viramati, which means to desist from, to stop. enjoying. And then you put the putti. Putti, again, it just intensifies that negating effect. Putti viratta then means refraining, abstaining from. It's a past participle. Ratta is past participle. Yeah, it's not actually being used as a past participle. It's being used. Let me just see. Almost as though it were like functioning almost like a present verb. They do not refrain from. But it's not actually a verb. It's not a grammatically. It's not a verbal form. But the sense is that they do not refrain from liquors and wine. Liquor and wine. Yeah, it's modifying. What is it modifying? Yeah, samana and brahmana. Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps we could translate it, they have not refrained from. Yeah, because it's a past participle, so they have not refrained from drinks or drinking liquor and wine.
But it's an ablative.
Two ablatives together form and modify. No. Upati viratta is not an ablative. Sura Maria Pana is ablative. That means from liquor and wine.
Well,
Upati viratta goes, it modifies samana brahmana. So these ascetics and brahmins have not refrained. Here, have not refrained. Upati viratta is modifying samana brahmana. And what they are not refraining from is drinking liquor and wine. So, ayang bhikkhave, any questions, further questions about this sentence? Ayang bhikkhave pattamo samana brahmananang upakileso. So this, O monks, is the first. Pattamo is an adjective meaning first. And pattamo qualifies upakileso, corruption, of ascetics and Brahmins. Yena upakilesena upakilita, corrupted by which corruption, ake samana brahmana na tapanti na basanti na virochanti. Corrupted by which some ascetics and Brahmins do not glow, do not shine, do not radiate. Any questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Upakilita? Corrupted. Okay, I should have explained that. Upakilita is also a past participle. I don't think we ever use the verb, but the verb would be kileseti. Yeah, kileseti would mean to defile, to corrupt. Then it gives a past participle, kilita. But we don't get the plain form, the simple form very often. Usually it's prefixed by upa. And then the K doubles. Upa kilita. There's another form. Sun kilita. But sun has a prefix. S-A-M.
What is the difference?
In this particular instance? Not very much. It's just that in certain contexts, sankilita is used. In other contexts, upakilita. They're just nuances. You can't say that there's a very clear distinction between them.
We often
It's a little bit like asking, why is the sky blue? Why are clouds fluffy, not square and triangle?
One thing, it seems to me that Pali started out very organized.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, when you look at the grammar, it's all the way downhill. You know?
Really?
Yes.
No.
A lot of irregularities. A lot of similarities, but then it's okay in this case, and it's used in this, that case.
Yeah. I'm sure if we examine English closely, you'll find the same things in English. Yeah. As long as they don't bring tones into it. Imagine if I were to say Avam Ava, then I was told, not Avam Ava, it's Avam Ava. Okay, let's continue. Okay, Sante, next one. Santi Bhikkave, Eke Samana Brahmana. I should point out, sometimes the difference in prefixes are important. Sometimes the differences are so minor, they're just nuances. For example, the word jnan. The root nya. From this root, you get jnana, which means knowledge. Vijnana, which is usually translated consciousness. The fifth aggregate, sh. And sanya, the third aggregate. And panya, which means wisdom. And so these are different types of knowing that evolve from the same root, but they have very clear and distinct meanings. Sanya, we translate perception. Xiang, is it? Xiang?
Xiang.
Yeah. Should I finish the passage? It's not as long as it seems because the concluding sentence that repeats 3-4 times. So it's really just, the rest is fairly simple. Okay. Sante Bhikkave Eke Samana Brahmana Metunang Dhammang Pati Sevanti Metunasma Dhamma Apati Viratta. There are, O monks, some ascetics and Brahmins. Okay, pati sevanti. First, the simple verb sevati usually means to serve. Or something, but it could take on extended meaning of to practice. Then it has the prefix pati, pati sevati. Maybe we could render to indulge in or engage in. And here the word metunang damang means sexual intercourse. So there are among some ascetics and Brahmins who engage in sexual intercourse. Metunasma dhamma apati viratta. Here, what is case is metunasma, ablative, and dhamma, again? Sure? Good, because it was correct. But if you weren't really sure, then you might have hesitated and say, could it be nominative, plural? No. Yeah. So metunasma and dhamma agree with each other. They're both ablative forms. And they're singular, yeah. Okay, and they don't refrain from that apativirata. And then the next sentence is the same as the previous one, except dutiyo, instead of patamo, dutiyo. Ayang bhikkhave dutiyo upakileso, the second corruption of ascetics and Brahmins. Next one, santi bhikkhave eke samana brahmana jata rupa rajatam sadhyanti jata rupa rajata pati gahana apati virakta. Okay. The verb sadhyanti means something like to accept, to enjoy. Let's see what pronoun they use. To receive. And jata rupa means gold, particularly gold made into the form of currency, coins. And rajata is silver. So there are some ascetics and Brahmins who receive or enjoy gold and silver. They accept offerings of gold and silver, those were the currency. They accept offerings of money. Jata rupa rajata patigahana. Here, patigahana means accepting. It comes from the noun gahana, which means taking. Patigahana, it just enforces the meaning, reinforces taking to oneself, maybe. Taking up, receiving, accepting. So they do not refrain from acceptance of gold and silver. Ayang bhikkhave tatiyo upakileso. This, O monks, is the third corruption of ascetics and Brahmins. The next one, santi bhikkhave eke samana brahmana micha jivena jivanti micha jiva apativiratta. There are, O monks, some ascetics and Brahmins. Here, jivati means to live. And ajiva means livelihood, means of living. And micha means wrong or improper. So there are, O monks, some ascetics and Brahmins who live by a wrong means of livelihood. In other words, things like fortune-telling, palmistry, there are various types, many types of wrong livelihood for ascetics mentioned in the time of the Buddha. Choosing, selecting sites for building houses, going to the palace and then giving kings predictions about whether they'll succeed or fail in their military undertakings, blessing armies. Many are still practiced today, too. Okay. So they earn their living by wrong livelihood, and they do not refrain from wrong livelihood. Then the next sentence, ayang bhikkhave chatuto samana brahmananang upakileso. This, O monks, is the fourth corruption of ascetics and Brahmins, and so on. Then the concluding sentence, ime ko bhikkhave chataro samana brahmananang upakilesa Yehi upakili sehi upakileta eke samana brahmana netapanti nubhasanti nivirochanti. So we end, these, O monks, are the four corruptions of ascetics and Brahmins, corrupted by which some ascetics and Brahmins do not glow, do not shine, do not radiate. I'll leave the verse for next time. Or maybe you do the verse next time. Any questions on this?
I'm just curious, when you translate Deity or not verbal with entry past,
it's a past participle, but it's used somehow, it's come to take on almost like a present tense. The sense is they do not refrain from this.
Just before you said they have not refrained.
Yeah. It would still sound a little odd in English. We could say that this, maybe it's originally a past participle, which somehow is acquired a present tense meaning, an action which started in the past and is continuing at present.
Another question is,
to live by a livelihood, yeah, it always takes the instrumental. Just like in English we say, he lives by this type of livelihood. He earns his living by this occupation, by this work. No, dative gives a sense of for something. One lives for this, for that. Any further questions? Okay, then next time we'll complete the front readings of this lesson and then maybe move into the further readings. I have to say that there's a lot of vocabulary. They give a lot of vocabulary, I notice, both in the front part and for the further readings. But don't be daunted. Don't think you have to memorize every word before you move on to the next lesson. I'd say when you see words that seem to have dhammic significance, memorize them. Other words, just be able to recognize them, to look them up when you come across them in the reading. Wait. Section 3. Nabudje papakemite. Verses and poems are the same. They're verses. They're poems. Or verses taken from poems. From the Dhammapada, I think. So it has a meter. Nabudje papakemite. Nabudje purisadame. Bajeta mite kalyane, bajeta purisuttame. Okay. The Pali protecting devas. Akasa ta chibumata deva naga mehidika punyanta nganumoditva chirangra kantu. Sasadang akasa ta chibumata deva naga mehidika punyantang anamodipa chirangra kantu desanang akasa ta chibumata deva naga mehidika punyantang anamodipa chirangra kantu pali basang.
Asking the devas to protect the Pali language.